Welcome to Switzerland in Sound, produced and presented by Bob Zanotti.
Peter, the finance minister, Hans Rudolf Merz of the Radicals, and Moritz Leuenberger of the Socialist Party, the Social Democratic Party of Switzerland. He was the minister, quite a portfolio, communications, transportation, and environment. They have both, almost at the same time, announced their resignation. Are you surprised?
Not really, because you can say that both of the two gentlemen concerned, Mr. Merz, Mr. Leuenberger, were pushed by their parties. The Social Democrats pushed Mr. Leuenberger out because he's been minister for 15 years and there's not really very much social democratic about him. There may be a lot of ideology elsewhere.
He's very green, isn't he, Peter?
Well, he says he's green, but he still likes to send his big Mercedes to distant St. Gallen while he rides in the helicopter, etc. And Mr. Merz, the finance minister, really has just tried to ignore his heart still stand a few years back and total ill health. And he's also tried to hide the fact that he must take a soup bowl full of pills every morning.
Beside that, he has been considered responsible for the malaise surrounding the UBS affair, some would say a scandal, where he decided to turn over the names of 4,500 American UBS bank account holders. Moritz Leuenberger, I think, also has a lot of egg on his face, and a lot of people are angry around the area of Zurich Airport because he allegedly, according to them, gave away noisy landing rights to the Germans. Neither of these two men, to elaborate on what you've said, neither of these two really is very popular.
No, I don't think they are. But I think what is interesting is that I think both Mr. Merz and Mr. Leuenberger, and this is a considered opinion, are part of the modern generation of Swiss politicians who are driven largely by ego and little else.
I believe what you're saying, Peter, is what I have felt for a long time, that both of these men represent a generation of high politicians who are perhaps the last generation of the old guard, the old-time federal council, where nobody really cared what you did. You got in there, made a name for yourself. You left with a big pension, what is it, 250,000 francs a year in retirement. You had a gold star next to your name. This doesn't work anymore, does it?
I think the big difference is that in the old days when they were allowed to do what they wanted more or less, and that meant quite a lot of power, this was coupled with a sense of innate responsibility for most of the members. I think Mr. Merz,
it was almost patriarchal, wasn't it? I mean, there was a
patriarchal
in the best sense of the term.
I think the real fault of both Mr. Merz and Mr. Leuenberg is that they are absolutely short-term thinkers. I think all their actions and their reactions are just based on short-term policy, if you could even call that policy.
Now let's look at the candidates. No shortage of people are like autumn mushrooms springing out of the ground. At least among the Social Democrats, there are several candidates. Interestingly enough, mainly women. I haven't heard of a single male candidate as we speak. Not too much heard from the Radicals, on the other hand. Can you give us an analysis?
Yes, I mean, basically, the Social Democratic Party is very interested in female representation because they were the first to have a cabinet candidate, Mrs. Uchtenhagen, way back. She wasn't accepted. And the first party to have a woman in office was the Radicals with Mrs. Kopp. And basically, the SP, the Social Democrats, think it's prestigious to have a cabinet with perhaps even five women and two men only.
These people will be replaced in September. How do you see this boiling down?
Well, it's very early days yet, and as you said, the new candidate pops up practically every day, and it's only when the parties finalize their tickets, probably both parties will put forward two candidates each to make Parliament's life a little bit easier, but it's such early days yet. The other problem confronting the parties is, do they keep the balance of power constant? In other words, do the radicals keep their two seats? Do the Social Democrats keep their two seats in the cabinet? Or does each party lose one? For instance, the radicals, if you accept sort of more or less, if you like, equal representation according to the popular turnout, the radicals don't really deserve two seats anymore because they only have 15% of the vote. And the Social Democrats have only just over 20%. So they're both slightly marginalized when it comes to having two cabinet ministers. But ultimately, I think there will be no great rumpus in this election because in a year's time afterwards, there will be general elections for the whole cabinet.
Okay, Peter Holler, we don't have to wait too long to find out, and we'll be back here on Switzerland and Sound with you to analyze the results. Peter Holler, Switzerland and Sound's political correspondent and analyst, thank you very much indeed. To demonstrate the difference, let's take a news story about Swiss financial help to the World Trade Organization in Geneva. It's read here in High German.
Die Ansiedlung der Welthandelsorganisation WTO in Genf hat für die Schweiz finanzielle Konsequenzen. Der Bundesrat, die Landesregierung, ersucht das Schweizer Parlament, Darlehen von 32 Millionen Franken in eine Schenkung umzuwandeln. Damit sollen die Immobilien finanziert werden, welche die WTO beherbergen sollen.
And now, here's the same news story, translated, as it were, into the Bernese dialect of Swiss German.
Dass die neue Welthandelsorganisation WTO auf Genf kommt, wird für die Schweiz eine teure Sache. Der Bundesrat, unsere Landesregierung, hat die eidgenössischen Räte müssen bitten, ein Darlehen von 32 Millionen Franken in eine Schenkung zu verwandeln. Mit dem Geld sollen die Gebäude bezahlt werden, wo die WTO da reinkommt.
Even without knowing either language, it's evident that there's a considerable difference in the sound and rhythm of the two. Incidentally, Bernese is one of the most distinctive Swiss German dialects. Swiss German dialects go back centuries and in some cases have changed very little over the years. Back in 1830, a central Swiss priest by the name of Franz Josef Stalder tried to publish the first dictionary of Swiss German, the result of decades of research. But Europe was in a state of upheaval and revolution then, and there was insufficient support for the project. But now, more than 160 years later, the original work has finally been published and is being welcomed as a valuable new tool in Swiss German etymology. To mark the event, the Central Library of Lucerne recently mounted a special exhibition. I asked the library's director, Dr. Alois Schacher, to first define the word dialect in the context of Swiss German.
Well, the question, of course, is a difficult one because we have 18 cantons out of the 24 which are German-speaking. You cannot say there are 18 dialects. There are more dialects than cantons, which means that the area spoken by each dialect is smaller than even these small states, as the Americans would say, or cantons are.
But there are families of dialects, right?
There are families, and actually the all of Switzerland, without, with the exception of Basel, belong to the same dialect family, which is called Upper High German. Upper in the geographic sense, up to the Alps.
Now, Basel is also similar, to dwell on this for a moment, with the Alsatian dialect,
That's
which
exactly
is spoken across the border.
The point. Basel does not belong to Upper, but to Lower Alemannic, and Alemannic is the large tribe, if you wish, or the large larger family of dialects, and Alsatian on one hand around Strasbourg and Swabian in the Black Forest is the same dialect group as Basel.
But we all can understand each other. I mean, these are related in such a way that we don't have difficulty in communicating in dialect.
Yes, on the whole, we can. I think we have some difficulty with Alsatian. We have less difficulty with Swabian from the Black Forest.
And then there's another extreme south of the Alps, the Valaisan dialects, which are really in a world of their own, aren't they?
You are going very far, and I'm surprised that you know so much about the dialects, because that is called Highest Alemannic, which means it's the most archaic dialect spoken in Switzerland. And in this case, it's high, because it's high up between these 4,000-meter peaks. But it's so special because it has been isolated for so many hundred years that it retains, you speak of Wallis, it retains endings which disappeared from High German in the year 1000. But that is an extreme case. On the whole, you could say that the Swiss dialects have retained an essential character and quality of pronunciation, especially of Middle High German, which changed to High German at Luther's time in the rest of the German-speaking country.
As far as the rest of the country is concerned, could we generally say about these linguistic groups, we have like the Bernese group, we have the Lucerne, or the Central Swiss group, the Northern Swiss, and the Eastern Swiss group. Did I leave any out?
No, I think you're correct, but perhaps it's more precise to say that you have the old, or as I said, archaic groups, which is in central Switzerland in the mountains. You have the Midland dialects with a very special group around Bern and a special group around Zurich and so on. And one of the elements, of course, is that the Midlands is where the main population lives. And that is exactly also where the dialects tend to be watered down nowadays. In other words, the Midland dialects lose their flavor and their identity, partly because of the mobility of Swiss people nowadays, moving from one canton to
life
another.
Is more cosmopolitan,
life
more
is
mobility.
More cosmopolitan, and evidently there's another aspect. You have German-speaking television, not only our own, but that of Germany and Austria. And that is part of our daily input that we receive. And then you are in a consumer society, and that creates the same kind of vocabulary. So that, again, is one of the reasons why Swiss German is losing much of its quality, but not itself. And I think that's one interesting point. 150 years ago or 100 years ago, people were afraid that Swiss dialects would disappear. There's no such danger. But you have no longer this extreme differentiation from one village to another, which you had 100 years ago, that one object was called one thing in one village and in the next it was called differently.
On the question of dialect itself, sometimes we have the feeling that a dialect denotes or connotes a certain inferiority of the speakers of the dialect, that they're somehow not well educated, that they're unsophisticated. At least in the Swiss context, this is certainly not true.
This is absolutely the distinguishing element of Swiss dialects. They are the spoken language of German-speaking Switzerland, and German-speaking Switzerland is 70% of the country, one of four cultures, I mean, besides Italian, French, and Rhaeto-Romance. And these 18 cantons, everybody speaks as their daily language dialect. The minister, the federal minister, will talk to his secretary of state in dialect. Only when he goes to a meeting or when you're in parliament, you use High German, because otherwise the French or Italian speakers wouldn't understand you. So you have a High German as the written language, newspapers, books, and so on. And the dialect is the spoken language of everybody. A problem for our national unity, because it's extremely difficult for French speakers or Italian speakers to learn one of the Swiss dialects. They learn High German, the standard language, in school, and then they can't use it. When they get into everyday life in Swiss German, in the German-speaking part of Switzerland, they only hear dialect. And some schools in French-speaking Switzerland have introduced some lessons in Swiss German dialects, because otherwise they take their train to Zurich and then they don't understand the word in the shop.
We're talking about tremendous differences, grammatical and vocabulary differences, that make them two totally different languages. I mean, if you go farther north in Germany, above the Black Forest, those people just don't understand the dialects here. There's no way to communicate.
Do you know the story of this, which this Swiss friend of mine told me? He was in the American army, and he said at Monte Cassino, the Americans used Swiss radio people, and the Swiss radio people talked dialect, but the Germans, 2 miles away from them with their cannons, could not understand their Swiss dialect. So it was a secret language as against the German army.
Also used by the International Committee of the Red Cross for additional security, if it's needed.
Well, that's good.
So we've made the point about the dialects. Now let's, Dr. Schacher, look at the author of this work, Franz Josef Stalder. We're talking about his dictionary of Swiss-German dialects. Who was this man? I mean, where did he come from? What is the background to him?
He was a man from the city of Lucerne, a priest who became a parish priest in the mountain valleys between Lucerne and Bern. He lived in the same village for 30 years, and he was very important in developing the school system as a district inspector and so on and so forth. He was really a man of the Enlightenment whose life's goal was to improve the education and the moral level of the population. Actually, he started studying the habits, we would say ethnology nowadays, the habits, their ways of life, their peculiar customs, idealizing these mountain people like everybody did in the time of Rousseau. But because of the observation of their everyday habits and life, he, of course, started to pick up their expressions. And since he was 37 years in that mountain valley, there was hardly a word which he hadn't a chance to hear and write down. But then he also built up a system of informants throughout Switzerland, of doctors, priests, teachers, who sent him lists of words, idioms, or peculiar expressions of their area. Otherwise, he could never have collected this material. I mean, this volume with its 660 pages in two columns has somewhere around 12,000 to 15,000 words. I'm not talking of the subheadings, but in that order of 15,000 words. Well, this means that he worked 40 years collecting all this, his own work plus that of his informants.
Even though much of the character of the Swiss-German dialects has been preserved over the years and the meanings have remained relatively similar over centuries even, certainly there have been changes, influences from the outside. Words have gone out of style or have been lost or deleted in some way. In that sense, how useful and up-to-date is this work?
It's interesting. When I first tried to answer a question of the same type, I spent quite a lot of time looking for words that I didn't know. And there weren't so many at first reading. As I went further into it, I discovered that many words no longer exist. And many words which he gives are known to me, but in a different meaning. And many others exist in exactly the same meaning. So it is not something out of date. The 160 years since it was finished have, of course, changed Swiss society. And I think that's one main point which you would have all the world over. Namely, this was a rural society. A rural society would have 3 words or 5 words for the colors of the cows, or would have different words for different types of soil. Well, when it's no longer a rural society, the words disappear for that very reason. For instance, you take a word like to cry for children. If any Swiss would listen to it, they would be astonished to find under the letter B four different words for crying, namely prieke, bake, brüle, priesche. Four words in one letter of the alphabet for different modes of crying of a baby.
And the first three are still used in Bernese dialect, in the Emmental, for example.
Except one of them, yes.
The fourth.
Three of them, of the four, three are still used.
And what does that mean? I mean, what does it tell you about the users of that dialect?
When your object of life is your children, you find the word for every detail of their everyday life. I wish it were still the same, quotation mark. Now we use all our linguistic potential to find differences in the usefulness of computers. While this was family, farm, church, whatever. And I think this is the wealth which is in there, and which is also, humanly speaking, partly disappearing.
Mag nicht Kirchhirten, mag nicht Sauhirten, aber Roshirten, da die gern. Da kunnt die aufwuppen, kunnt da vorreiten, kunnt da Leben führen, als wir die Herren. Jettiriari, hui, jettiriari, jettiriari, hui, jettiriari.
To people coming from big countries in particular, a glance at the map of Europe gives the false impression that Switzerland is a tiny country that can be absorbed in no time flat. On the contrary, although small in geographic size, Switzerland's topography makes traveling around here slower than one might think. Beside that, this is a country of great natural and cultural diversity, featuring three distinct cultural groups who speak four different languages. Think of Switzerland, and the first thing that comes to mind is the Alps. And a trip to the high mountains should be a high point of a visit here, quite literally. But do you realize that a trip to the famous Jungfrau Joch in the Bernese Oberland will take you the better part of a day? The same is true of travels to popular destinations like Zermatt Matterhorn, Wengen, Pilatus, Riki, or Davos. Even if you don't take to the mountains, which would be a shame, there are still so many destinations that even visiting just a few would take days. This is true even if you keep to the major urban centers like Zurich, Lucerne, St. Gallen, Bern, Geneva, Locarno, or Lugano. My standard advice is, if you really want to get a true taste of Switzerland and its diversity, you need at least 4 to 7 days, absolute minimum. Cost-wise, Switzerland is one of the world's most expensive countries, and I'm not going to pretend that this is a cheap destination. But London, New York, or Tokyo are far worse. In fact, a vacation in Switzerland doesn't have to be expensive. First of all, there are package deals and discounts available, and any good travel agent should be familiar with them. Information is also easily available through literature and the internet, and of course, here on Switzerland in Sound. As for getting around, the best way is by public transport. Switzerland has the world's densest and most efficient mass transit system, and it serves literally every nook and cranny. This is a country where you don't need a car, but if you insist on driving, bear in mind that Swiss rental car rates include all insurance, and there are no additional hidden taxes. The stated rate is what you pay. When it comes to eating, Switzerland is known for its high standard of restaurants and cuisine. Every region of the country has its specialties, and dining out here does not have to cost the earth. International fast food chains and inexpensive eateries are to be found in most cities, but it would be a crime to come here without trying some of the fine local dishes. Menus are displayed outside most Swiss restaurants, so there are no surprises. And remember, tips and gratuities are always included in the price of the meal. and there are also no additional taxes to be paid. There is so much more to be said, but I'll end here and invite you to navigate around Switzerland and Sound to learn more about visiting this country and some of its major attractions and destinations. When planning a trip to Europe, give Switzerland some time and enjoy your stay.
If you want more information about Switzerland and Sound, check them out online at www.switzerlandandsound.com.
Hi, this is Bob Zanotti. Do you miss Swiss Radio International? If so, I invite you to visit my website, SwitzerlandInSound.com. Colorful and informative radio features about Switzerland, its destinations, interesting people, politics, culture, and even the two Bobs, SwitzerlandInSound.com, where English language radio from Switzerland lives on.